Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Aaron Ramsey and you're listening to the Arsenal Weekly Podcast.
Here's Alexis Sanchez! What a finish! Walcott's going to go through and score! Into the middle, Giroud! It's two!
Hello, I'm Russell Hargreaves. Welcome to the Arsenal Weekly Podcast for the week of the 18th of January 2016. On this week's show, Olivier Giroud talks to us about his Champions League record with the Gunners. We see the debut of our new feature, Access Arsenal, and Adrian Clarke stops by to preview this weekend's London derby with Chelsea. But we're kicking off with Dan Roebuck and Nick Brumsack in a bumper weekend review. Arsenal had tough trips to Liverpool and Stoke last week. Let's start with a quick recap of what happened last Wednesday at Anfield.
So a corner for Liverpool, left-hand side, up goes the signal. And it's drilled towards the near post. It's flicked on initially by Chan, but Arsenal should be able to clear. This is Theo Walcott, tries to prod it forward for Giroud, but Liverpool have it back. Chan once again, edge of the area, looks to get the shot away. Good save from Pedicek. Out to Abu, gets the shot back and it's in. That is Firmino that gets the goal. The Brazilian in the right place at the right time to thrash home beyond Pedicek, and it's Liverpool that have the lead. Paulo Torre will clear for Liverpool, only as far as Campbell, who takes a touch edge of the area, tries to slide it through. Ramsey on the turn, finds a corner! Arsenal back on level terms. Terrific move with Aaron Ramsey in the right place at the right time, beating Simon Mignolet at his near post. Really good work inside the penalty area, and Ramsey draws Arsenal level. Henderson takes over, plays it towards Moreno. It nearly ricocheted back towards Milner. It does go to Milner, edge of the box. Now it's with Firmino, gets the shot away! Oh, what a goal! That is a worldie for Firmino, who's on the score sheet again, and Liverpool are in front again. Very little backlift, very little room, hardly anything to aim at, but he's found the top corner, and it's Liverpool 2, Arsenal 1.
He's got it through, he's always hanging up in the air a bit.
Tell you what, Mignolet flattered him. Meanwhile, in comes the corner. He's been nodded in! And Arsenal have got a leveller. 2-2 in this extraordinary fixture here. Well, how about that? Who got there at the near post? Was it Giroud with a flick on? It's swung into that near post area.
He's certainly claiming it, isn't he? It almost looked like it went straight in from the corner, to be honest. It was so quick. And the centre, there's just barely any reaction apart from the Arsenal players. It's incredible, really. What a start to this game. 25 minutes gone, 4 goals.
Flamini, has he given it to Milner? No, he hasn't. Bellerin, he's too quick. And Hector coming forward on the right-hand side. Can he take it beyond Moreno? Short ball, Campbell, edge of the area. Looks to play through here inside the box. The shot on the turn, finds the corner! That is brilliant from Olivier Giroud with his left foot. Well, he might have missed an opportunity in the first half. But in the second, a swivel inside the box to find the bottom corner. His second, Arsenal's third. And for the first time, the Gunners are in front. That is some strike from Olivier Giroud. Slip through for Sacco. Sacco stabs it back now for Henderson. 90 nearly on the clock. It's long towards Benteke. Knocks it back inside the box. Allen is there! He's forced it home! Liverpool have got an equaliser in the 90th minute. It is 3-3.
Delighted to say that Match Day Show commentary team Dan Roebuck and Nick Brumsack have joined me now. And Dan, we'll start with you. You, of course, as we've just heard, were at the game at Anfield. What were your thoughts on that 3-3 draw and what Arsenal took from it?
I think ultimately it was disappointment, wasn't it? Because Arsenal were, in my opinion, the better side, had more of the chances, had more of the opportunities to score more than the three goals that they did. And as we've seen over the years, I can't quite remember what the stat is about conceding late goals. I'm sure Arsenal fans will know. But we did it again at Liverpool. It happened last year. It's happened over the course of the Premier League. And unfortunately, Joe Allen popping up in the 90th minute to prevent us from getting the full 3 points, which I think we deserved. It was a very open game of football. It was a game of football that saw Liverpool, I think, have 60% of the possession, which is always unusual when Arsenal play. It doesn't matter if it's a top team, a middle-ranking side, or a side racked with relegation problems. Arsenal usually have more of the ball, but Liverpool had more of the ball. Arsenal were good on the counter, and really, when Giroud scored his second, Arsenal's third, just 10 minutes after the restart, you'd like to think that Arsenal should have been good enough to get the job done. But unfortunately, Liverpool managed to grab an equaliser. I mean, when it all comes down to it, in May, we might consider it a point gained as long as we win the title. But I think there is an air of disappointment off the back of that Arsenal didn't win it because we should have.
Nick's here as well, as you mentioned, and great to have both of you with us again on the Arsenal Weekly podcast. Nick, obviously from there, Arsenal then moved on to another tough away game at Stoke, where you've just been and just come back. And cold, you got injured. It's a pretty tough day by the sounds of it.
Yeah, very, very cold. I don't think I've ever actually been as cold at a football match. Looking at the game, I think Arsenal produced quite a solid performance. You know, it's a ground that they've struggled on in recent years, and Arsene Wenger mentioned that, considering his side's record at the Britannia Stadium, it was probably a decent point. Having said that, I think it'll be tinged with a little bit of regret because in the final third, they weren't quite good enough. And when they did manage to create chances, Jack Butland was in excellent form.
He really was, wasn't he? And that was fascinating to see the two goalkeepers, Jack and Peter Cech as well, both so impressive. And I love the kinship and the camaraderie between them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they've probably been two of the best goalkeepers in the Premier League this season. And you know, the way that Butland came out to spread himself when Giroud went through in the first half was very impressive, as was his save at his near post just at the start of the second half. And, you know, Petr Cech, I think more than his saves, it's actually just the way in which he commands his box. You know, the defenders that seem so confident, and Hector Bellerin, who we spoke to after the game on Arsenal Player, was making that very point, just saying when you know you've got someone that great behind you, it gives you so much more belief, so much confidence. And that double save from Hosselu and then from Bojan was fantastic, as was his save from Hosselu at the death as well.
Dan, what do you feel that Arsenal, when you look at the two games in context, two tough and hard-fought draws away, the return from those matches as we move forward, where do you think the club stands?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think it puts a lot of pressure on the game against Chelsea upcoming because we've only managed to get 2 points from two games. Now, they're two hard places to go, and it's been well documented that Stoke have beaten the vast majority of the top teams at home this season. So again, you can look back on that, like the Liverpool game, and think, yeah, well, a point's okay. But if you're going to win titles, you've got to win games. And interesting to hear Nick talk about Petr Cech and Jack Butland there. I mean, Jack Butland made three terrific saves from Olivier Giroud in the first half, one from Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, and then again from Giroud in the second half, the header. They were only Arsenal's three attempts on target, but there were quality attempts on target, if you see what I mean. And I think that there was a little bit of a lack of cutting edge up front. We didn't seem to get going. It's only the third time this season in the Premier League that Arsenal have been shut out, and the first time since the Chelsea game away from home, in which we had a player sent off, of course. So usually we're good for a goal, but it was a tough game, wasn't it, up at Stoke? And it was very cold, and it was a game that, again, we might think, yeah, that is a point game. But what I think what it does do, the two games together, what it does do is it puts a bit of pressure on our next fixture now at home against Chelsea. And if you think, if you can get 5 points from those three fixtures, it's sort of acceptable. Not exactly what we wanted, but acceptable, because it should keep us top of the table.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah,
it does put pressure on the next fixture.
Nick, obviously Mesut Ozil being missed, I think, and being missing as well for that last game was important, and hopefully he'll be back possibly for the Chelsea game, as we understand. But he is such a key heartbeat, isn't he, and such a key contributor.
Yeah, of course, with 16 assists, you know, it's a league high, and it shows just how important he is. And I thought yesterday's game against Stoke, it really illustrated how much Arsenal missed Mesut Ozil, because when they got in the final third, there just seemed to be a lack of composure sometimes. There were good runs being made, particularly by Hector Bellerin, Joel Campbell as well, and sometimes Arsenal just failed to pick that man going forward. And, you know, I think it just illustrates, as I said, what Ozil brings to this team, because when he's on the ball, he gives you so much time, he alleviates pressure, and he always seems to play the right pass at just the right pace as well. So hopefully he can come back for that Chelsea game, along with Alexis Sanchez, of course, as well, and give Arsenal that increase in firepower.
And obviously a new addition was on the bench for this game. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, Arsene Wenger says Mohamed Elneny is a player who can operate both as a box-to-box midfielder and also someone who can sit in at the base of midfield. Interesting to see that he didn't play. I'm not too surprised, actually. Stoke away is a baptism of fire or a baptism of ice in yesterday's circumstances.
Tell us about the soup. You were telling me about the soup off air earlier.
Yeah, the soup. The soup was actually really well needed, I must say, because I was freezing cold and we needed it. A lot of it did go flying because my hands were so cold, but I think Dan appreciated it.
So you're basically there shaking, trying to hold the soup, and it's flying everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, burning my hands, but it was needed.
I have to say, Russ, we sent Nick downstairs to the press lounge to get some soup at halftime, and when he came back up, his hands were shaking. He was shaking. The soup was going everywhere. He said he enjoyed the soup. I said, yeah, I really enjoyed it as well, Nick. And he said, yeah, but I'm not quite sure what flavour it was.
Well, funny that, actually, because the woman serving it, she didn't know what flavour it was either. So, yeah, it's one of those, you just got it down your gullet and said no more.
And only 6% of it went in your mouth anyway. The rest of it was all over you two and all over the rest of the fans and journalists around you. I don't know. And you lost a toenail as well. So it wasn't a great day in that regard. But anyway, we move on, boys, and a goal of straw out of the Potteries and back home to the Emirates Stadium. Do you think we could possibly, Dan, see any other additions coming in? How do you feel the squad, with a lot of injured players out at the moment, is shaping up for these tough battles that lie ahead? And the fact that Arsenal are still contending, of course, in three big competitions.
I think the supporters would like to see more additions. I think initially Arsene Wenger suggested there might be, but the fact that he was talking up Danny Welbeck's return in the press conference last week may suggest that we might not have any forward players, or at least a striker, coming into the club by the time January is out. I would suggest no, but you never know. And Arsene Wenger always leaves the door open. And if he believes that a player of special interest comes up, then he would be in for him. But my gut feeling is that the business might be done.
And then at least there's this cohesive unit that has been showing great progress and great signs, can then continue to hopefully, Nick, evolve and bring home the silverware that everybody craves.
I think that's one of the main positives from the last few weeks, actually, when you look at the players that Arsenal are still missing, the likes of Coquelin, Cazorla, Alexis Sanchez, Mesut Ozil for the Stoke game too, and that's not even to mention players like Welbeck, Wilshere and Rosicki. It shows that Arsenal have that squad now. They have the group needed, I think, to compete for the title. And I, like Dan said, I'd be very surprised if Arsene Wenger does do any more business, judging from his comments on Friday. But he has always said that if something spectacular is put in front of him, he's not afraid to do it. So we'll wait and see, but I'd be very surprised.
Very much looking forward to that Chelsea game, the London derby. Dan Robert, Nick Brumsack, brilliant to have you both back on the Arsenal Weekly podcast. And as ever, really appreciate your time, boys.
Thanks, Russ.
Cheers.
Thanks, Russ.
You're listening to the Arsenal Weekly podcast.
Olivier Giroud is enjoying another fine season for Arsenal, scoring 18 goals already, including 5 in this season's Champions League alone. His hat-trick against Olympiacos in matchday 6 took his tally to 11 in 24 games for the Gunners in the competition. He sat down with Arsenal media's Josh James to discuss his fine European form.
When you look back on the season, our first half of the season, you've already scored some fantastic goals and another one the other night. But the goal away to Bayern Munich, no one talks about because we lost. Was that must be one of your favourites, though, was it?
Yeah, it doesn't help the team to come back, but it was a good one. Yeah, good cross from Alexis at the right place, and that's what I wanted to do straight away. Not a lot of space, but try to hold the ball and chest it. And after I like this chest, I used to do it a lot when I was in France, but I'm a fan of Jean-Pierre Papin as well, so I used to do a lot of papinade, and that's like how would you say?
Bicycle kick.
Yeah, bicycle, something like that, so an acrobatic bicycle. So, yeah, I like to do that.
And the Olympiacos game, of course, will be forever in your memory, your hat-trick. Tell us about your memories from that, and what have you done with the hat-trick ball?
Yeah, I'm just going to say that I made it signed by the whole team, and it was an unbelievable night for me and for the team, and we remember that my first hat-trick with the team. I was all the time closed with some braces. Mm-hmm. But this one I couldn't forget it because above all, it was a hat-trick, but even more because it helped us to qualify to go through. So amazing.
And that penalty you took, how many nerves were there?
The thing is, 2-0, we are qualified, 2-1, we are out. So if I didn't score this penalty, maybe we could have been in trouble till the last minute, and you never know, like Liverpool game. Mm. So yeah, better to score it, and thanks God I put it in.
Olivier will be looking to add to his Champions League goal tally when holders Barcelona visit the Emirates in just under 5 weeks' time. We're at the halfway point in today's show, so it's time for a history lesson.
And it's Adams, put through by Bold! Would you believe it? Or Charlie George, who can hit him? Oh, lovely goal!
It's up for grabs now! Thomas! Right at the end!
On the 19th of January, 1878, the architect of Arsenal, Herbert Chapman, was born in Yorkshire. Chapman managed Northampton Town, Leeds City and most successfully Huddersfield Town before being convinced to take over the Gunners in the summer of 1925. A true innovator of the game, Chapman led an overhaul in transfers and training at the club. Here's some audio from the history of Arsenal about the great man's time and impact at the club.
Chapman's first signing was the legendary Charlie Buchan, an inspirational captain. Then there was Joe Hume from Blackburn and future skipper Tom Parker from Southampton. This team took Arsenal to their first cup final in 1927 against Cardiff at Wembley. As the 20s drew to a close, Chapman continued to build his team. Players such as Eddie Hapgood, David Jack, Alex James and the prolific Cliff Bastin became Highbury legends. With their revolutionary WM formation, Arsenal were now ready to take on the football world. The game would never be the same again.
These are the Arsenal players from whom the final selection of the team will be made to appear at Wembley on April the 26th.
This happy band of brothers was on the verge of making history, and that elusive first trophy wasn't far away. Ironically, the 1930 FA Cup final was against Huddersfield, Chapman's old club. In tribute to the manager, both teams ran out side by side, the first time this had happened at Wembley. The game went to plan for Chapman and his assistant Tom Whittaker, Alex James giving Arsenal a first-half lead. In the 83rd minute, Jack Lambert sealed victory with this goal, and captain Tom Parker lifted the cup to mark the start of a decade of Arsenal domination in English football. The first championship followed 12 months later, with Arsenal scoring an incredible 127 goals en route to the title. The Gunners were a potent force, and everyone in the country wanted to see them at first hand.
Many of those on the hillside have already paid admission to the ground. However, they think the view is better even a quarter of a mile away. Well, they know.
In front of 67,000 people, this sixth-round FA Cup tie was finally settled by a header from giant centre-half Herbie Roberts. Arsenal were on their way back to Wembley, where they would meet Newcastle United. In a keenly fought north-south battle, it was Welsh half-back Bob John who gave Arsenal the lead, much to Herbert Chapman's delight. He was never one for outlandish celebrations. But the equaliser from Boyd was given in the most controversial of circumstances. From this high angle, it appeared winger Richardson had run the ball out of play before crossing, a fact confirmed by this artist's impression. Newcastle went on to score again and win the game 2-1, but defeat didn't keep Arsenal down for long, and a season later they won the league for the second time in 3 years. One important development was the new kit, their now famous white-sleeved shirts introduced by Chapman in March 1933.
As mentioned at the end of that clip, it wasn't just on the field where Chapman revolutionised the game. He promoted the use of floodlights, developed a PA system which passed team news on to fans, and created a letter and number scoreboard at Highbury, which would go on to be widely copied throughout the entire country. Arsenal also have Chapman to thank for being the only football team in London with an underground station named after them. Here's Arsenal greats George Mail and Bernard Joy talking about Chapman's leadership.
He was a great psychologist. He was able to do things which probably a lot of other managers, probably a lot of other players wouldn't have stood for. But he did it in such a way, such a quiet, softly spoken way, that nobody ever seemed to take offence at it. And of course he could add a little bit of steel to that, what shall I say, soft manner, by the things he actually said, which were quiet.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And to the point.
He was, without any doubt, the greatest manager of all time, because he lifted league football to professional level. He made the game a great entertainment industry. He knew tactics backwards and forwards. He got a great air for publicity. And in addition, he managed to persuade the players to lift themselves on behalf of the club.
Chapman's life was tragically cut short on January the 6th, 1934, when he died of pneumonia, aged just 55 years old. Today, he's remembered as the single most important figure in Arsenal's history. And on December the 9th, 2011, a statue of him was unveiled outside the Emirates Stadium to celebrate the club's 125th anniversary. We'll have another history lesson next week, but up next, it's the debut of Access Arsenal.
Arsenal.
We'll bring out the fanfare. It's time for a new feature on the Arsenal Weekly podcast this week. In Access Arsenal, we'll be talking to individuals who work for the club. And I'm delighted to say that we're joined by the pitchside compere, Nigel Mitchell. Nigel,
hello,
great to
there.
Have you here. How are you?
It's great to be here. And no pressure on launching this new feature.
I think it will completely depend on how good you are over the next few minutes, basically. So exactly no pressure whatsoever. Among your various roles, of course, you're the voiceover artist for Arsenal World and also for this very podcast as well.
Maybe
we could kick off with a live version of your Arsenal Weekly podcast. Welcome.
If you like. Welcome to the Arsenal Weekly podcast. I'm in the studio this week.
I love it. Just tell us a little bit about what you do then as your kind of combined role here.
Every week, every Tuesday normally, I record Arsenal World, which is our global programme that goes out across many, many territories to millions and millions of Arsenal fans about what goes on around the club, sort of an access all areas, really, of the club. So if there's an event that's going on at Emirates Stadium, we talk about that involves some players. For example, Gilberto's charity was recently here, so we had a nice little feature on that. We do a close-up interview every week with a different first-team star, and sometimes they run over a course of weeks. So Petr Cech obviously has an amazing story. That's one of the favourite ones that I've voiced recently. And lots of other little features that make up a half-hour programme, and it runs throughout the football season. And it's such a brilliant show to be part of, because you learn a lot doing it, as I'm sure you find when you're doing this kind of stuff. You learn loads about the place that you work for as well whilst reading, don't you?
So, no, absolutely. It's a fascinating thing, isn't it? And obviously on match day, you're very heavily involved, aren't you, with what goes on?
Well, this is the dream. And if I had a pound for every time someone tweets me and says, you have the best job in the world, I'd be a millionaire. It is. It's such an honour to do it. I mean, I'm an Arsenal fan anyway. I've been an Arsenal fan probably since the age of about 10 or 11, when my granddad first sort of introduced me to the club. He said, I like the way George Graham plays football. I like, you should watch this team. And it was the Anfield 89.
Yeah.
Of course, there weren't that many games televised, if I remember, back in those days. So that was what the game of the season, wasn't it? And right at the end of the season, and sort of saw it and then went, that's my club. And so to stand there on a match day and say, welcome to Emirates Stadium, and then interview those guys I grew up watching, you know, the Lee Dixons and Thierry Henrys, the Tony Adams and the Bergkamps, it's pinch yourself stuff. And I always try and remember every time before I do it, I go, you are so lucky to be here, such a great opportunity, and embrace every moment of it, because there are millions of people out there who go, well, I know, because on Twitter they always go, you're so lucky. And I'm like, yeah, I know. But I love it, absolutely love it. It's a wonderful club to be part of, you know.
Must be pretty much exactly the same age as me then, doing my sums from what you
probably
just said.
Yeah.
And coming into all of this, as you say, supporting Arsenal as a boy, but you didn't come through this route at all, did you?
No. My background is children's television. As actually, you know, the likes of Jake Humphrey with BT, we all sort of learnt our trade on the children's TV circuit, really. And I was very lucky when I was 15 years old. I'd always wanted to be on the radio, funnily enough, so I used to pretend I was on the radio at home in my bedroom and force my parents and my family to listen to me being on Capital Radio and all that kind of stuff. I used to just make up all these little jingles and things like that. And
so this is probably my background.
Oh, is it?
So
yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, kindred spirits here. Yeah. That's great. And so that's what I'd always wanted to do. And then I'd heard on the grapevine that a channel called Nickelodeon, a brand new channel at the time, back in 1994, were looking for presenters with radio experience. And so a friend gave me the number and said, why didn't you phone up and say you've had some? And I went, well, I haven't really. They went,
and you're how old at this point?
I was 14, blimey, I think, 14 yeah. or 15 at the time. And so I phoned up, managed to get an audition and went along and then didn't hear anything for a year. The guy went, yes, we'll definitely use you, and never heard from them. So that was my first introduction to the cruel world of the media at a young age. And then my school said, you need to do work experience a year later. So I phoned up the same guy and went, look, I did an audition for you a couple of years ago. Any chance I could come in and make some tea or whatever? Weirdly enough, he'd just been watching my audition tape from the year before and said, actually, why don't you come in on Saturday and I'll put you on for 2 hours. And if you're any good, you can stay. And that was my first break back in... It was actually 20 years ago, yeah, now. Scary. 1995 it was, in March. So I learnt my trade. There was no script, there was no auto cue, there was nothing, and then went through Disney Channel, Children's ITV and all that kind of stuff, and then, amazingly, got the opportunity here.
How did that one come about, then?
Well, being in that kind of industry, you kind of have an agent,
yeah.
as you know, to find you work, and the agent I had at the time knew I was an Arsenal fan and knew that Arsenal were setting up a TV channel and were looking for presenters, not necessarily with sports background. And I was a bit nervous, if I'm being honest, because I hadn't worked in sport before. And you know what it's like, you're expected to know stuff, aren't you?
Yeah.
And so I did find it quite hard when I first started. It was a very steep learning curve, but Arsenal were amazing and took me under their wing and basically taught me how to do it, which I'm will always be very grateful for. And then they sort of kept finding jobs for me over the years. And I was originally training ground reporter, so I would go up to the training ground every week and interview the players and sit in on the first on the press conference and then write a little report on that for the TV channel. Then when the TV channel ended, started doing Arsenal World, and then was in the office one day and one of the guys in the office said, how do you feel about doing interviews at pitch side? And I thought about it for all of 5 seconds and went, yes, please. So, and I've done that now for 3 years, and as I've said, it's a dream job, really.
Tough one, I'm sure, but what would be one or some, then, of your favourite individual moments since you've been working for the club?
It is a very tough question, because there have been lots of, you know, pinch-yourself moments. The highlights probably would be, if I was to think off the top of my head, doing the pitch side stuff, obviously, and the interviews that stand out would be Dennis Bergkamp, probably. The day that his statue was unveiled outside, he came pitch side. I think we were playing Sunderland, actually, in that game. And he joined us pitch side at half-time. And every interview that we do, you know, it's nice to see the stadium is quite full. This was packed at half time. No, the beers and the pasties, I don't know how well they sold that day, because everyone seemed to be in their seat just to watch Dennis Bergkamp. And you could hear a pin drop, and that was amazing. When Dennis spoke, It was absolutely silent. 60,000 people. That was a magical moment. And for these interviews, I submit the questions. And it was quite a funny moment with Dennis, because obviously we had to submit the questions for an Arsenal point of view, for an Ajax point of view, and from a Dennis point of view. So they had to be approved by three different sets of people. So I sent off the questions and go, this is what I'd like to ask Dennis. So we get to the interview on the day. It's going really well. The crowd are just hanging off every word that Dennis says. And the last question I ask him is about his current role at Ajax. And that's the last question that's been approved that I have. That's the last question on my sheet. And then Dennis answers the question and then says to me, and I think I know what the next question is going to be. And I'm thinking, well, I haven't got another question because it hasn't been approved, Dennis. So I thought, what can I do here? So I turned to the crowd, and this was why I think this is such an amazing moment. The crowd have always been very kind to me, and I love working with them, and it's just a brilliant, brilliant two-way thing. And I said, shall I ask the next question? Thinking, I haven't got another question because I think I know what he wants to say. So shall I ask the next question? And 60,000 people roared, yes! And I went, well, Dennis, I don't think I need to ask the next question, but I think you might have an answer to it. And then he said, well, of course, I'd love to come back to Arsenal one day, blah, 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 blah. And in the back of my mind, I thought, well, if ever anyone says to me, you shouldn't have asked that question, I was going, well, I didn't.
Yeah. It's a very clever way out of that situation. I'm very impressed. You've got to think quickly in these situations, haven't you?
You did, because I thought, well, I haven't. None of these questions have been. This extra question hasn't been approved, so I've got to try and work out a way to do this. But it was a great moment, and that was a highlight. And going on tour with them, the guys this year to Singapore with Puma was amazing. To be asked to do the kit launch was such an honour. Both in London, you know, co-presenting with Thierry. It's not co-presenters
bad, is it,
go.
Really?
It's a dream, you know. I've worked with lots of co-presenters over the years. He's probably my favourite co-presenter. No offence to the others.
Be a bit starstruck, let's be honest.
No, I wasn't. It's an interesting. I don't really get starstruck.
No.
I think maybe because I've been fortunate enough to be doing this for so long, and over the years you kind of meet so many people, and you just kind of think, well, they're normal people. They're fine. I think the moment you get starstruck, you're in danger of not doing necessarily your job.
Yeah, and he's trying to find that thin dividing line between that and, as you said, always being very appreciative and very respectful and grounded about your job as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
And still having that excitement and that wow factor at that
Absolutely.
End.
Absolutely, it's very exciting. For example, a couple of weeks ago, Wrighty sat next to me for the entire match. And, you know, in the child in you's going, oh, my God, I'm sat next to Ian Wright. But you have to go, oh, Wrighty, how are you doing? It's, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you just have to play it cool. You know, as I say, you've got to remain, I think, professional at all times. And I always try and do that. Hopefully it comes across.
I think it does. And hopefully this segment will return after your fine stint. Well, cracking debut, I think, hopefully, for Access Arsenal.
Yeah, best of luck with it.
Thank you very much indeed for getting involved.
No problem. Thank you.
You can see Adrian Clarke on The Breakdown every Monday on Arsenal Player, and he's here now to preview the Gunners' clash with Chelsea this coming Sunday. Adrian, how's it going, my friends?
Yeah, all good. One or two sniffles, but I'll survive.
Yeah, I'm the same. Bit of man flu blighting the Hargreaves household at the moment, sadly, but we're here, we rise above it.
We do,
move on. Arsenal, of course, moving on, hoping to get back to winning ways, as we've been discussing on the Arsenal Weekly podcast. Some solid battling results, but this London derby against the Blues is a real chance to make another statement, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. Arsenal have edged their way back to the top of the table without being wholly convincing. We did talk about this spell, didn't we? The three matches that would really test their title credentials. And I think we've seen that, really. The 3-3 at Liverpool, it was an open game. There were positives, but negatives. And against Stoke as well, it wasn't the perfect performance, but the team showed certain qualities that helped them get a valuable point. But I think we're all hoping this time around against Chelsea that we can make it 5 points from a possible 9. Because if it was anything less than that, you'd look back at this period potentially as being a really disappointing one. So this is a big, big game for Arsene Wenger and his men.
And heading into playing a Chelsea team who've just had a bizarre season, haven't they? I mean, to be defending Barclays Premier League champions, then be right near the bottom, get rid of Jose Mourinho, bring back Gus Hiddink. I don't know where to start.
No, it's been a pretty shameful defence of their crown, hasn't it? It's been a mess from top to bottom. I don't think the board supported Jose Mourinho particularly well in the transfer market. He then lost the plot, got a little bit too moody, if you like, and took out his frustration on the players and the staff. Morale was at a low, and all of a sudden the results just went to pot. And it's a situation that they're really struggling to recover from. We've seen flashes of the old Chelsea. I think we saw it at Crystal Palace recently on their travels. So they're not to be underestimated, Chelsea, but they're not the same side that they were last season, not anywhere near.
And what do you make of Hiddink coming back in and for me at least, giving the players the chance to try and at least re-express themselves and have a bit more freedom and just take control of their own destinies a bit more?
He's a good man manager. Players like him. So he is actually the ideal interim choice, I'd say. When an outgoing manager has upset pretty much the whole of the squad, the idea really, or the best thing to do is to bring someone who will raise morale, give everybody a confidence boost, and like you say, encourage them to express themselves and to play with no fear. Chelsea shouldn't play with any fear. They've got nothing to play for, really. I don't believe they're genuine relegation contenders. We joke about it here at Arsenal, but I don't actually believe that they are in trouble in that regard. So they can freewheel between now and the end of the season and really enjoy their football without too much pressure. And that in itself, I think, is a slight danger for Arsenal ahead of this game.
Yeah, absolutely. And what do you make of Hiddink's recent results? Because they've not been brilliant, have they, in the league? They've got Europe to look back ahead to in a bit, which is brilliant for them, but they've not been particularly great the last couple of weeks, have they?
They've only won once under the Dutchman, so that's not great. They were way too open against West Bromwich Albion, against Everton at home. It's crazy the amount of goals that they're conceding. Chelsea have let in more goals already this season than they did in the entirety of last, which just seems mad, really, given how long we've got left of the current campaign. So yeah, there are lots of things for him to work on, but they will have these real good performances as well. I don't think we should underestimate Chelsea and treat them like any other bottom half of the table side. They've still got real talent and the ability to hurt Arsenal if they bring their A game.
And to rise to the big occasion with those class players that just need a bit of cajoling and the fires to start burning again. Diego Costa is scoring again, for example, among those more positive signs. Is he an area that could hurt Arsenal?
There are so many areas, really, that Chelsea could potentially hurt Arsenal. Yes, I think the Fabregas-Costa the partnership is showing signs of reigniting. We've seen a few of those balls over the top, and in a game at Stamford Bridge in the last couple of years, we conceded a goal with that kind of move. So we need to be wary of that. They're always strong on set plays. They continue to threaten opposition teams from those situations. And you've got Willian, who has been a consistent performer this season. So he's another guy that will be looking to hurt Arsenal. See, look, I think they can really cause problems for the Gunners if we're not concentrated and fully at it.
On the flip side then, Adrian, where can Arsenal hurt Chelsea?
Well, we can really get at them, I think, in central midfield. They still haven't got the balance right. Fabregas, at the moment, is better than he was, but he's still in and out in terms of form. If he plays, I think he is a weakness without the ball. I think Aaron Ramsey can make runs off of him. So too Mesut Ozil. So that's an area we can really cause damage. And the centre-halves are struggling. Which combination is Hiddink going to go with? Is it Terry and Zouma? Is it Terry and Cahill? Is it Zouma and Cahill? We just don't know. I think Terry will play, but those two centre-backs are not in great form. So if we can get in behind Chelsea, really use our athleticism, I think we can, and flash balls into the penalty area, I can see Olivier Giroud having a good day.
And our key battle area then, two players head-to-head, I guess, does it partially depend on if Ozil's fit?
Well, I was actually thinking about that head-to-head that caused so much of a kerfuffle at Stamford Bridge with Koscielny against Costa. Now, we don't know if Costa's going to be fit yet, do we? Because he's picked up a shin injury. If he's fit, how both of those two handle it in terms of their temperament, I suggest, will have a big factor. Because Costa will wind Koscielny up. He did it to great success in that first match. And it's imperative that Laurent just holds his nerve and uses his football brain to overpower him. If that duel isn't the main one, I like the look of Willian against Monreal on that right-hand side. You've got one of the best right-wingers in the league against, I think, the best left-back. So that's another good battleground.
And in a sentence to conclude, Adrian, how do you beat Chelsea?
Well, it hasn't been easy to beat Chelsea. It's been three goalless draws at the last four meetings. So my advice this time around to beat Chelsea is to unleash the shackles. They are uncomfortable at the moment. There's no point holding back with a handbrake. Let's go at them, score goals early, and make it a tortuous afternoon.
Attack, attack, attack. I like it. Clarkie, thank you very much indeed.
Yeah, top man.
You can join Dan Roebuck and Stephen Hughes for all the pre-match build-up from 3:30pm UK time on Sunday, and then uninterrupted audio commentary of the game at 4. That's full time on this week's show. Our thanks to Olivier Giroud, to Dan Roebuck and Nick Bromsack, to Nigel Mitchell and to Adrian Clark for stopping by today. Remember, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so you'll never miss a new episode, or you can listen every week on our SoundCloud page as well. We're back next week on Monday the 25th of January, and until then, it's bye for now, and come on, you Gunners.
Thanks for listening, and remember you can subscribe to the Arsenal Weekly Podcast on iTunes or listen to a new show every Monday on Arsenal.com and SoundCloud. The Arsenal Weekly Podcast.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.